Welcome to Travel Stories with your hosts, Tom Kim and Trevor Mountcastle. This episode, we are talking Japan travel with the one, the only, Joe Petrovic. Welcome, Joe.
Welcome,
Thanks,
Joe.
Thanks for having me again, guys. How's it going?
We are just so happy to have you. And for those listeners that are listeners and not watching the YouTube, show me the miles. I love the shirt. I love the shirt. And your background is A&A Square Class, or no?
This is the new suite.
The new suite. Yeah. Square Class is like what, 10 years ago? Gosh.
I haven't flown it yet, but I have it booked twice. I'll talk more about that, I guess, as we go along, if we have time.
Oh, I think we will definitely have time to talk about that. I mean, candidly, I almost want to jump right in if we can.
Sure.
Go for it. A&A is a little bit of a blind spot for me nowadays. I got to fly it, I don't know, maybe 13 years ago, I think. And I just randomly found one seat in first class out of Chicago. And I found two seats for my wife and my mother-in-law in business class. And I feel like I've never seen it since.
Yeah, I've only flown it once myself. So I'm also a blind spot for me.
It's been kind of tough lately with A&A, and they have, they actually release two business and two first every day, 355 days in advance. And of course, you know, if you don't have A&A miles or something that opens, and if they, assuming that they open it to partners as well, that's been one of the issues. I think we'll get into some of the tough things that are, but that's just an issue right now, is them actually opening to partners. I think, you know, when I first jumped into this space many years ago, well after you guys had been into it for a while, these things were pretty reliable as far as availability. They weren't like the greatest availability, but they were there, and they were there on partners. And these days, I think partner awards are getting harder to find, but A&A is definitely bookable. I helped a friend recently book two business and two first for him, his kids, and his wife. And effectively what we had to do, I mean, jump on the second that it opened. And it ended up working out. We actually didn't get them right away, but we waitlisted, and apparently whoever got before us dropped them or decided not to keep them or something. So we got him all four, but it's a tough process to get these at open and then throughout the year up to departure.
So you say the exact second. What time do they open? I know that when we used to talk about Lufthansa, we used to belly about like 8 p.m. 8 p.m. Frankfurt time, and
they drop at, what time is it? It's, I think it's 11 o'clock. No. Let me think about this. When did I have to do this? It depends on, it's 9 a.m. Japan standard time. So they don't change their clock. So for me, it's 8 p.m. on the dot at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, same as you guys. And, just depends on where you are in the world and what time zone we're in, because it's 8 some of the year, 8 p.m. and 7 p.m. some of the rest of the year.
So break out that slide rule to figure out
it's on the second. Like, I mean, I literally, we tested this a few times, and we failed the first couple of times because we waited a few seconds in. I mean, we got our millisecond timer out, and the second that it was flipping over, we're clicking go. And it's a process, because you have to get familiar with their website. It's not just like, American, where you just push everything and it goes. I mean, it's, there's a lot of things you have to accept in order to get it to go. So, I mean, there's a 3 or 4 step process you've got to get through. And if you're not the first one to get that done, somebody else nabbed it in the meantime.
Kind of love Japanese websites, you know, go on Japan Airlines or A&A. There's just something about, the Japanese and the way that they do websites. It's just a little bit arcane, you know?
Yeah, their websites are, I would say they're probably going on, 10, 15 years looking old or so. I mean, they might even go back 20 years as far as how they function and look. They're definitely a process. And I think that's one of the things that had made these so appealing for the longest time, because most people didn't have access to them. And if you learned how to use, say, the ANA website or the JAL website, the Japan Airlines, for anybody who might not know what JAL is, those are, you know, they're not easy to use, and not everybody had access to the miles. And until recently, JAL was, pretty much the only way you could get access to those is moving Marriott Bonvoy points over.
Yeah, and how quickly things change there.
Three partners.
You've got Rove, you've got Bilt, you've got Capital One, right?
Capital One, yeah. And you still have Bonvoy as well, so four.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it's pretty incredible, I have to say. I mean, my fear is that as we pivot over to Japan Airlines, JAL Mileage Bank, it just seems too good to be true with some of the other partner awards that they offer. I mean, what is it? Something like 65 or 80,000 round trip if you book a round trip down to South America or something similar to Europe. I mean, there are some really good values, and now that currency is a little bit more available. I'm excited for it.
I recently learned, about a month or so ago that JAL, I guess I always knew it, but you know, it was not a currency that was terribly accessible to me. And, because it wasn't, not only was it not terribly accessible to me, but I had no interest in Japan just over 2 years ago. So it wasn't a program I paid a whole ton of attention to. And, you know, everybody talks about the Cathay bookings for BA, you know, to save some taxes and pay less points than BA themselves. If you want to book BA, you know, over to Europe, book it through Cathay, and it's going to be less miles, and it's going to be probably similar or less taxes depending on the award type they do. If they charge more miles, then it might be a similar price in taxes and fees, but you know, they can be less, and JAL would be even less for most. But of course, if you're getting them from Capital One, unless you get a transfer bonus, it's not going over 1-to-1. And then Rove and Bilt transfer 1-to-1, Bonvoy transfers 3-to-1.25. But if you transfer Chase over to Bonvoy, you can effectively make it a 1-to-0.7 during like a good transfer bonus to Bonvoy. So you're taking, if you said you have to move 100,000 ultimate rewards over to get 70,000 JAL miles, that's the way to do it. It's a kind of a process. That's how I did it. That's how, before there was Capital One, Bilt, Rove, any of these partners, I would wait till Chase had a big transfer to Bonvoy, 70% transfer, and then move them over that way.
And that's not a bad value, 100,000 Chase Ultimate Rewards points for what otherwise is a very, very difficult award to get to Japan Airlines or on Japan Airlines to Japan.
I think, you know, what a lot of people are looking for right now is that new A351. They want the A350-1000 with the new first class suites and the business class suites and all that sort of stuff. And they're bringing them online. I think they still have three on order. They just brought one, I think, last month online. So that's how we ended up with the LAX route that just started. I think it was earlier this month. So they have some options with that particular plane. And I ended up snagging that on the way to Tokyo last March, just over 2 days prior to departure. And I waitlisted the flight, and I was so happy when it cleared. But it was 85,000 JAL miles, which, if you want to look at it with that transfer bonus that I took advantage of, is around 125,000 Chase Ultimate Rewards.
And that's business or first?
No, that was the first class suite.
Ah, very nice. Very nice. Yeah, we had the chance to fly the A350 in business class, and I thought it was quite nice. I mean, it was only business class, but I mean, you still had that sort of fancy speaker.
Right. I didn't really try it. I couldn't figure it out when I was on that plane. I was able to do it when I flew first, but when I did the business class, I had done it the year before in business on that same plane, same route. And I could not figure out those speakers, couldn't get them to work or anything. And maybe it was just the plane was too new
They're
at
pretty
that time,
gimmicky.
and maybe it wasn't working. So,
Yeah, I mean,
they are kind of gimmicky. I mean, I don't hear terribly well to start, and so like the headphones I kind of need. Like I'm that guy that has the headphones at like that 80 to 85% volume just to be able to hear most of the movies. And I actually I'm weird. I actually like to watch the movies. That's like when I catch movies.
You had to be like really like centered or something to be able to hear with those
Right.
gimmicky headset things. So, yeah, definitely the headphones
Yeah.
are a lot better. But, you know, overall, that being said, without that feature, the business class cabin on that product is, I think, pretty good. I think we had a pretty good flight on that, and I enjoyed it a lot. I remember it being one of the better business class flights from Asia that I can recall.
I can't think of a bad Japan Airlines flight, to be honest with you.
That's a good
I
point.
like even
Even in
we
economy.
even flew economy way back during the pandemic. We flew from what Tokyo down to
Manila, right?
Manila and
Yeah.
back in economy, and like we had a triple or we had a 767 on the way down, and then we had a 787 on the way back, and even that was very comfortable. I mean, the flight the service really makes up for a lot, I think. It definitely makes up for a lot, and it probably helped that there, we had nobody next to us. I think on the 767
Had a
we
row to
had ghetto lay
ourselves or something,
flats.
I think.
Yeah.
I've only flown domestic economy in JAL on the A359. So it's basically the same plane on a 350, 351 or the A350-1000, just in their domestic configuration. And so I never had any problems one way or the other, but I've probably flown domestically 4 times. My first time in a small plane is actually coming up in, I think, early June. I'll be flying one of their 737s. It'll be first time I've been on a small plane in that country.
I think that's our only small flight, or at least mine. We flew from Kix, Osaka to Haneda, and they do an interesting one, right? Because I think don't they do like a three aisle? Didn't they have a weird business class? I'm
Yeah,
trying to think.
they actually have some of the bigger planes, like the A359s have two for first, and then they have two, it's either three, I think it's 232 for business. So it's kind
Yeah,
of
it's.
like
I think we had
the
like a 767, if I remember, when we flew from Haneda to Itami, the closer airport
Yeah.
in Osaka. And I
Didn't that one
remember
have
we
throne
passed by
seats?
the first class cabin. It was, I don't remember too well, but I remember thinking, "Well, this is kind of interesting looking."
Yeah, I'm gonna have to go back to my pictures because I just remember it being very unique. Like it was like a 2.5 seat row or something weird like that where.
So we had a wide body to the smaller domestic airport in Kix or in Osaka, right? But then when we flew back from Kix to Haneda, it was just on a narrow body. It was on like a 737.
And my first one is going to a small airport probably nobody has ever heard of, is the Shitohama Airport, which is in more in southern it's south of Osaka, south of Kix, south of Itami. So it's way down there, and that'll be an interesting flight. I can't wait to do that. I actually am staying there on some Hilton certificates. They're 200,000 points a night for this new SLH property. It's called Five Springs down in Five Springs, Shitohama.
Wow.
So it's looks like a really nice, it's basically like an all-inclusive style resort with fine dining and all the good stuff. So we'll see how that goes.
And are you going, are you taking the family or going?
My brother and sister-in-law, my family is not the least bit interested in traveling to Asia, much less anything farther than maybe a 2 to 3 hour flight. They're pretty much homebodies here. And so I end up taking my brother and sister-in-law, who are very much interested in Asian culture and study Korean and all that sort of stuff. So we usually end up going and exploring, you know, wherever we can.
That's awesome. And it's great that your family is supportive of that as well. I'm sure that there's lots of trips to Fort Myers for them in it for them, right?
Yeah, they're going to Clearwater this week and then again in about a month. So I'll end up meeting them there after my second Japan trip here.
We talked about kind of trips and tricks for ANA and sort of just how to get the JAL miles. Any tips on finding JAL awards that you want to share with our listeners?
Right now, it's kind of tough. I mean, I think we have some stuff talking about devaluations, but I think the biggest devaluation of all is the availability. The biggest devaluation of everything right now is due to the, you know, reduction in force from the Middle East carriers, due to fuel prices, due to everything that's going on in the world at this very moment. Right now, award space is just being made scarce. Whether they're doing, you know, award fee hikes, whether you're getting fuel surcharges, or whether they're just making those desirable saver awards scarce, I think we're all finding that that's just becoming harder to do right now. So the only thing I would say to do is that you can find the space. If you're trying to do it, JAL does not release quite as many awards as ANA does. So, but they do release close. They release at 360 days. And the 360 days, I believe, is midnight Japan Standard Time, which is like 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time every day right now during this time of the year. And at 360 days out, you can book one first or two business class tickets. And they typically release those to partners, and you have two partners that do have access to that right pretty much right off the bat, just as JAL does, which is Cathay Pacific. But the other one that most people miss is Finnair. And so if you have Finnair Avios, then you can use those to book again also. And the benefit of that is they're actually slightly less expensive than either BA or Cathay Pacific in terms of miles. But of course, Avios always has huge transfer bonuses. So if you booked, I think it's around 125,000 miles for a first class flight using Avios on Finnair. And if you get a 40% transfer bonus, it drops it into the right around the 80,000 mark or something. Or no, I'm sorry, it's a little bit more. It's like 95,000 points.
I mean, still, that's still a pretty good option, especially given how easy it is to get Avios points compared to, you know, JAL.
Yep. How do you feel about connecting itineraries? Because I know that might be another strategy. It seems like there always is a flight to Taipei, you know, from Seattle somehow, you know, whether it be on Delta or, you know, one of the other carriers. I mean, you know, you got a bunch of choices, right?
No, I think personally, my interest is, it just because I've taken an interest in Japanese language and culture. I've been learning the language for the little over 2 years now. And so I do my best to stay on the flagship carriers. But of course, there is space. And that's an overlooked thing in this space, I think, is, you know, nobody looks at EVA or Starlux. You know, you can, Taipei is actually only 400 miles from Okinawa. So, I mean, you can go to Okinawa, it's 400 miles away. Okinawa is actually closer to Taiwan than it is to Japan, like to central Japan. So, you know, if you're depending on what part of the country, it may be easier to connect to a place like Kyushu or Fukuoka or Kansai, Osaka area than it is to go through Tokyo. And so if you can find that award space, like you said, through the other countries, I think that that's a big benefit. Of course, United has been, you know, a lot of people talk about the devaluations of the program and the fact that they're, you know, making changes to include a basic business class, to exclude lounges and exclude mileage earning and things like that. As of right now, mileage awards are not affected by that, but their prices on some of these Asia awards on United Metal have actually dropped from 110,000 miles without the card, 100,000 with, to actually 90. If you can find their Saver awards, it's 90 in the new Polaris business class. And usually you can easily add your connecting itinerary. So if you're not coming from one of the major hubs, you can connect that together. And, you know, unlike some of these others where you might have to position to make that happen. So I've even seen one of the interesting ones through Seattle. You mentioned Seattle. Mm-hmm. But Delta One has actually opened up Saver space via like partners. And I've seen like I haven't checked on Virgin, but I assume it's with Virgin as well. But at 87,000 flying blue miles for Delta One, Tokyo to Seattle, that might be an option for some as well.
For sure. I was just going to mention also for United, you know, I guess the other nice thing about having some reasonable rates for the mileages, if you can find the partner space, they are not usually providing the fuel surcharges, right? So they're not, right. You're not being charged, which I think we've got on the list too to talk about a little bit. Is, you know, unfortunately, ANA and JAL have been hiking up their fuel surcharges given the price of jet fuel lately.
Yeah,
you know, that's starting to be some real money, right? Because that's going up into the $300+ range for one
Absolutely.
Ticket per. So, you know, being able to, you know, maybe you pay a few more miles, but not having to pay the fuel surcharge if you can find the magic unicorn of partner space on ANA, you know, that is one benefit, I guess, for at least your troubles of hunting the unicorn.
Yeah, round trip, you're looking at $60. I mean, it's like $5.60 over just like a domestic flight. And then it's like around $50 to $55 back. And that's for both American Advantage as well as United Mileage Plus. So if you have one of those bookings, as of right now, there's no surcharges. Those ANA and JAL effective May 1st, 2026 are nearly doubling their international fuel surcharges from around 30,000 ish yen, which is roughly $200, you know, almost 60,000 yen, so upwards of $360 to $370, depending on currency fluctuations. And that's from mainland US, the Middle East, Africa, Oceania, and Latin American flights.
Yeah, so definitely, you know, don't sleep on some of these other routes, you know, whether it be, you know, Seattle to Taipei or to Tokyo, or, you know, I know I've seen a lot of like DFW to Incheon on American sometimes come last mm-hmm. minute a lot. You know, there's a lot of interesting routes that, you know, you can kind of try to work with. Although I must admit, I would definitely miss not having the cultural experience of an ANA or a JAL. I mean, they just do such an amazing job, probably among the best jobs of international carriers, integrating the culture into the service. You know, having a dedicated Japanese meal that has, in some cases, a little too much seafood for me sometimes.
That says a lot for you.
it does. But, you know, on the flip side, you know, being in JAL first and having, you know, the Queen of Blue, you know, tea, which, you know, I wouldn't say I would pay $200 for a glass of it. But, you know, if you're going to offer it to me in first class, let's go, you know. And, you know, just even things like, you know, just even flying in economy on JAL, you know, I love SkyTime. You know what SkyTime is?
I'm not familiar with that. No,
it is their juice. They have a special juice. They call it SkyTime, and I think it's like peach and peach and apple.
I think I've had it, but I didn't. It wasn't a name I recognized. Oh. But now I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yes. They have JAL has their own special juice. So even in economy, you can get a little taste of something that you only get on JAL, and you know, just lots of other interesting food items and other, you know, little bits of culture. You know, whether it be, you know, the little origami crane, you know, chopstick holder you know, to, you know, just little things that you're like, yeah, I'm on a Japanese airline.
For relaxing times, try SkyTime.
That was something I didn't get in first, but I got in business class. So I didn't get the origami crane. I only got it in business, never got it in first.
I'm trying to remember what they do something different at first, but it, you know, it's some of these things do kind of, you know, merge together a little bit. Although most of my experience has mostly been on JAL. I did do square class, first class once, but, and I was the only one in first class. That was also pretty fun because that was the only time.
Same experience, which is even more funny because my, with wife and mother-in-law in the mini cabin behind me, I'm like, oh, wouldn't it be nice if they could just come up here? No,
I guess
that definitely
rather
doesn't
just
happen.
Let the cabin, you know, go out with one seat than, you know, give up the rest of the seats for people, I guess.
More sake.
No, I did something similar, but not quite. It's like when I returned from Japan last summer, I was trying to get three seats in first, and I just could not pull it off. So my sister-in-law, unfortunately, had to sit in business class and suffer through, you know, the horrors of business class.
The horrors.
While my brother and I sat in first class. So, but we only had one other person. There's eight seats in that cabin, and it was me, my brother, and then a Japanese businessman. And so we had our seats and then our beds beside our seats. So, you know, it was really nice for them to set it up that way.
Love it when they do that. Absolutely love that. And the other thing about JAL is, I mean, their wine and whiskey game is just,
it's
top notch.
Yeah.
I can't think of anybody that's, you know, close. I mean, maybe you've got Emirates with the Dom Perignon, but I mean that Salon and Cristal are just simply fantastic, and I really do think that they do both. I think beat Dom Perignon if you ask me. But
don't forget,
I'm obviously not a
Hibiki.
Sommelier. Yeah, the Hibiki as well. Yeah, when we flew, we tried to get the 100-year, but or the 100th anniversary, or whichever it was, and because we were in business, no dice.
Yeah, they only sell it to first class passengers, and it's a pretty good deal if you can get it, because I've seen it in hotels for probably something in the ballpark of five times what I paid for it on the flight. I mean, we're talking about $2,000 a bottle, and on the flight it was around $350-$400, depending on which airline you were flying.
You can't beat that.
Some real arbitrage opportunities for alcohol sales. Is that considered incidental? You know, it's an in-flight purchase, right? So,
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Incidental for your Ritz-Carlton card?
I think so.
I haven't tried that one. No, you'll have to let us know.
There we go. That's a talk about the different angles that you can take at this.
I've definitely gotten some Ritz-Carlton incidental credit for some duty-free purchase. I think you were on a flight where I was doing some duty-free purchases using my Ritz-Carlton card. So that has come in handy for that.
Well, speaking of incidentals, though, you have the other cities that you can fly into Osaka, and you can get there for ways that are not through Tokyo. You can definitely fly into Kansai International, and you can do that via Toronto, Vancouver, San Diego, which I believe might be seasonal because it's not always showing up. Then you've got Los Angeles, San Francisco and Seattle. So those are other options. You don't always just have to fly into Tokyo. And I think, you know, those are things that sometimes you can pick up extra award space. I know I've seen it where it's all of a sudden there'll be a drop and it's all through San Diego. And, you know, it's one of those things that pops up every now and again.
That San Diego drop was actually how I took my father, my brother, and my oldest nephew to Japan before the pandemic. I mean, it was one of those, we had an Alaska ticket, and with Alaska you get the stopover, and so it was really perfect because we were able to do I think it was Baltimore to San Diego to Tokyo, so it wasn't Osaka, but then we continued on from Tokyo down to Singapore, all for I think it was like 70,000 points. It was quite the deal, I thought, 6-7 years ago.
maximizing. I was just going to say, you know, Trevor and I, you know, had the fortune to actually enjoy Osaka last year. So, you know, don't sleep on it. It's definitely a fun city to go visit. So if you happen to start your trip to Japan in Osaka, I don't think that's a bad decision at all. If anything, it's a little bit more chill than Tokyo, and you can kind of ease your way into the urban, you know, chaos and crowds.
Yeah, and it's more central to the country, so like you can pretty much go either way too, right? I mean, you can go 2-3 hours this way and be in Fukuoka, you know, 3.5 hours over to Tokyo, and if you're doing the Golden Triangle, maybe half an hour to an hour up to Kyoto.
I think that's June. Although we're adding, I think we're going to add Hiroshima as well.
Good stuff.
There's actually an interesting, oh, so you've been.
Yeah, I was there last year. We spent 2 days. We visited, I actually posted somewhere recently about this because there's a new Hilton transfer bonus right now. It's not as strong as when I did it, but I ended up booking two rooms, because Japanese hotels are notorious for only allowing, you know, two occupancy in their standard rooms. And so with my brother, my sister-in-law, and me, we couldn't all stay in one room. So the standard rooms at the Hilton Hiroshima are 50,000 points per night. And so I was going to spend 100,000 points per night to stay in a standard room and have no lounge access unless we got upgraded. And I'm gold and they're nobodies. So I ended up just booking us for 175,000 points per night straight into the presidential suite, which is a penthouse suite, gave us the lounge access, free breakfast, and all the goodies. And it was something that I really enjoyed. It was real presidents have stayed in that suite, company presidents, as well as a former U.S. president. And then we visited Miyajima afterwards, which is, you know, a place where a lot of people like to go for, you know, Insta photos and get a picture by the Torii gates. And then you can do a line up to the mountain and overlook the city and all that sort of stuff.
Now, how far was Miyajima?
Miyajima, depending on how you go, there's more than one way to get there. If you go to like the direct crossing, so if you take the ferry crossing, the closest ferry crossing, you're probably looking at a half an hour to 40-minute train ride from Hiroshima to the ferry, and then 10 or 15-minute ferry crossing. But there's a spot from right near the epicenter of the bomb drop in Hiroshima, where there's like it's not necessarily a speedboat, but it's a faster boat that can take you straight from the epicenter over to Miyajima. And I want to say that's maybe 20 minutes or so, 20, 25 minutes across from there. So that's probably the faster way to do it, but it is a little bit more expensive.
Cool. And then the other thing that we saw was that there's apparently like a slow train, an overnight train from Tokyo that that goes down to Hiroshima, and it's like a sleeper. They have sleeper cars and like a variety of levels of sleeper cars. So we might actually try that. I mean,
that'd be interesting.
It's not often you go to Japan or you hear about people taking a slow train in Japan,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, no, they're well, known you know, for it, their fast. Trains,
but they're known for their fast trains, but you know, they have a lot of these tourist trains that do exactly what you're talking about, that are the sleeper trains, and some of them are extraordinarily outfitted. You know, they're just, you know, among the most luxurious and spacious, you know, kind of train travel you can have. And you know, the train culture in Japan is just really top notch. I mean, there are few countries that love their trains and enjoy train travel as much as the Japanese, you know, and they have so many different ways to do it. You know, they can go at the absolute height of speed, or they can go, you know, really slow and very stylish and kind of do almost like a train land cruise is kind of how they have these scenic trains. And, you know, JR, you know, one of the main companies, among others, you know, a lot of some regional trains. Well, you could just do so many kinds of custom regional train trips in Japan. And I'd never done one. I've seen them on YouTube. I've seen them in other places. And one of these days I will do that because some of them look just incredible.
Well, you know, if we do it, I'll be talking about it in another couple of months. So
I'd love to, if you do it, I would love to hear about it. I would love to hear you share it.
Any other Japan tidbits that you want to share, Joe? I mean, obviously you've been to so many more places than I think a combination of the two of us have been.
And, yeah, and I'm going to be adding a whole bunch more over the course of the next month. So, I mean, I'm planning on visiting a lot of more outside of the cities. You know, I've done Tokyo, I've done Osaka, I've done Kyoto, I've done Hiroshima, I've done Miyajima, I've done Fukuoka, I've done a lot of Hakone. Hakone is a place that nobody talks about, but it's an onsen town. Where a lot of them go to, vacation. And so, I have, I guess if you want to jump into some of my tips and things like that, things that might be useful for people, I think so many people are going to Japan right now that, you know, like we said up front, it's harder to get the award space. But once you do, you know, and you have everything set to go, it's helpful to know a few words. And, if you're going in Tokyo, Osaka, Kyoto, of course, there's going to be a lot of English speakers because, they're catering to the tourist content. But if you have a few words, learn a few words like Ohio this morning, konnichiwa, afternoon, konbanwa is evening, arigato is thank you, kore is this, onegai shimasu, that's like please. So this please, kore onegai shimasu. 10%, most people probably don't know this, but 10% of the Japanese vocabulary is a Japanese-ified English. So they about 10% of the words in the Japanese vocabulary are English. So if you don't know something, try to make it, put on a Japanese accent. They'll tell you to do this, and they might actually understand it better. One of their words for toilet is toide. So toide, because if you say like toide wa doko, where's the toilet? Or biru kudasai, and biru is beer please. So not to be confused with bill, because they don't have, if you said biru, or which is their way of making that pronunciation, they'll think you're saying you want a beer or something. So you might go at thinking you're asking for the bill and get a beer.
Getting another round.
But for that, it's like okaike, okaike onegai shimasu. That's like the bill, please. So if you can get a premium cabin, it's awesome because you're going to get through immigration faster. Not just all the nice, things we get to see the Instagram influencers talk about online, but you, of course, are the first off the plane. And that's one of the things I found really interesting about both JAL and ANA is they block everybody from getting off if you're in first class. So if you're in first class, there's nobody getting off that plane faster than you are, which means you're first to the immigration line. And as for immigration, there's Japan Web, which is a website you can go and do your immigration forms online. Do that when you land, just like you would do coming into the States, and get that done so that you can get through security quicker. My last two times flying in first class with the Japan Web, I was through in 18 and 20 minutes. I was into the country. So, I mean, that's through Tokyo Haneda.
And that's probably even talking about the amount of walking that you have to do, too, not which just is the, never an insignificant amount.
Yeah, not just the walking, is also a restroom stop, too. So
there you go.
So, I mean, it's pretty quick if you do that. Have cash, have a little bit of cash. We all love our credit cards, but Japan is a little bit less forward thinking in especially more remote places. So if you go off the beaten path a little bit, you'll find mom and pop restaurants and stores that don't take credit cards. So have a little bit of cash. 30,000 yen is the equivalent around or so $200 right now. The currency is a little bit higher than that, so it $200 would give you probably 31,000-32,000 yen. But Japanese are intervene. The Japanese central bank is intervening right now. I mean, today the price has dropped quite a bit, so they're doing something. And today it's much less valuable than it was yesterday. So who knows where that's going?
I was just going to say this. Just historically, it's still pretty. You know, it's still pretty good value overall. I think the conversion rate. I mean, I feel like when I went to Japan a decade ago, you know, there was a little bit more like, you know, 10,000 yen would be $100 or a little bit closer to that. And now it's, you know, quite a bit difference. You know, things still feel in general like a good value, which is probably why Japan still gets so much, you know, wallet share in terms of people wanting to go and enjoying the country. So, I mean, it's, I guess, still a little bit on sale, even though, as you said, maybe not the peak.
No, if you look at it relative to, you know, we always talk about how we're devaluations. The dollar has devalued tremendously over the years, but the dollar has doubled against the yen over the last 15 or 20. So people that were going to Japan 20 years ago would go today, even with a less valuable dollar, and be like, oh my God, everything's on sale. You know, I went and bought some cosmetics for my wife the last time that here in the States were almost twice as much. You know, so I loaded up while I was over there and picked up some stuff. So, you know,
and you're a hero.
Yeah, she loved it. So, you know, but if you, you know, do those kind of things, it's, you just have to know that, you know, in some cases you may have to declare them and tell them that, hey, I bought something and I'm bringing something back. But I wasn't, you know, when I said what I was doing, they didn't tack on any fees or, you know, extra little taxes. So I guess it was okay. I would say recommend having a fee-free debit card. So, you know, like Charles Schwab or something of that sort. You can go to any of the ATMs and withdraw for free. But if you don't have those, of course, the 7-Eleven Konbinis, all have one of the best transaction rates. It's like a buck and a half to take out, you know, as much as you want out of your card. So,
and we don't talk about Charles Schwab nearly as much as we should. I mean, that's a great debit card to have that fee-free withdrawal. And it's a staple in my wallet. I don't know about you, Tom, but it goes, it's been to every country I've been to.
Yep. And, you know, it's almost like you forget about it.
Yeah, it never comes out.
It's been everyday carry in my wallet, you know, for 15 years, it feels like, at least. So it kind of is like, you know, it's kind of almost like you forget that, hey, that's something that people should do, because it's kind of automatic to a lot of people.
It's there to use.
Yep.
Well, when you're looking at it and you say the withdrawal from a bank, I mean, if you go and ask them for a currency transaction, they're looking at 7% typically. 7%, if you take out $1,000, they're immediately taking 70 of it. And so here you could take out $1,000 from the 7-Eleven Konbini ATM and it's going to cost you like a buck or two. So, I mean, that's a significant difference.
And you get to visit 7-Eleven in Japan, which is, you know, important too. Definitely,
well, that's a
must stop
in Japan. 7-Eleven is absolutely a must stop.
You cannot stop. You go to Japan and not go to 7-Eleven.
Absolutely. Yeah. And for everybody that grew up on 7-Eleven in the States, it is just, it is not a cut above. It is like many, many cuts above in Japan. It is absolutely a must stop. And the food's actually good and healthy, I think. Well, I mean, reasonably so. Compared.
Yes.
Compared.
Yes.
Compared to the States.
Much better than 7-Eleven in the U.S.
Yes. Yes. So let's talk about the NFC type cards, or the like to be able to get onto the metro, the subway, etc. Are there a handful of them? I know the Suica.
14 of them. And so
14,
there's like, I think it's 14 different cards, but the three major ones most people have heard of is Suica, Pasmo, and Ikoka. And it's like a prepaid debit card sort of that you can use. It's primarily for the train stations, but most places that accept any kind of electronic form of payment. So if you go to a restaurant, they might take these. You can use these to pay your bills. You can pick them if you're going to the one of the many vending machines that still exist on the streets. Most of those take Suica, Pasmo, Ecoca. And you can also, if you have iPhone versus Android and you want to get into the iPhone versus Android debate, I'm not an iPhone holder. I'm an Android person, but the advantage of having an iPhone over Android in Japan is that they have a different, I don't know enough about technology, but they have some kind of special NFC chip that the most Androids don't have. And so you can put the Suica on your iPhone into the mobile wallet, and then you can load it with your credit card. That can't be done on Android as of now. Supposedly, I'm hearing that either late this year or early next year that it's coming to Android. So I don't know what it is. The Android in Japan has the chip, so I don't know enough about that. If for any of the nerds who want to go look into that, feel free to do some research. But that's the way it is right now.
And just for clarification, you need one of those cards to be able to get on the metro, to be able to do anything.
You want
to
go?
I just say that because, like, was in Milan this past summer, and all you need is a credit card, and literally, you know, any card that has a chip, you just tap it and you just walk on, and you're fine. But you really do need it in Japan, right?
Yeah, you cannot. They're currently testing tap to pay credit cards in Japan, but they're very limited right now, so they're barely in existence. I think I saw something recently that there's like 12 or 13 throughout the entire country, and so that's not enough to really do anything for anybody right now. So you definitely need one of these cards to use any of the subways or trains that are not going to be part of the Shinkansen network. The Shinkansen is your bullet train, and you need a separate ticket for those unless you have a JR pass. Buying a JR pass may not be worthwhile if you're not on the train every single day of your trip. You know, back in the day before I had interest in Japan, those things used to be pretty cheap from what I hear, something like around $150. But today they start at $333 for an adult per week. And then it's like $550 for 2 weeks and $667 for 3 weeks. And if you look at it, you're going to want to price it out. JR actually even has a pricing calculator that says, where are you going to go? And if you're going to go these places, and they'll tell you whether it's better to get a pass or not. Because if you don't use that a ton, it's probably cheaper to just buy your tickets online. And you can do that through an app called the Smart EX app, where you can buy your Shinkansen tickets through the mobile app. And there you can use your credit card to purchase them. It is they're not cheap. The trains are typically like between Tokyo and Osaka or Fukuoka and Osaka are between $90 and $110 one way per person. So, you know, for those who want to ride the bullet train with their family and go to Osaka, Kyoto, and back to Tokyo, it may be several hundred dollars to ride those. And you may find that, hey, you can book an airline ticket for 6,000 miles and it's like an hour long flight. So, you know, you have to weigh in the experience of what you want to do versus what you want to pay.
Well, that's a really good point. As we were trying to limit the amount of flying that we were going to do around the country in this upcoming trip, but maybe it does make sense to look at. I just don't know what the Hiroshima flights are, if there are any domestic.
Yeah, they're definitely available from Tokyo, Osaka. I mean, pretty much just about anywhere you want to go. Hiroshima is actually has an airport there, but it's not close to the city. It's actually it's a 45 to 50 minute bus ride away from the city. And then if you try to take the train there, it's not much better. It's about the same. So I don't know. Some people might just say, hey, I'm going to go to Osaka instead. But no, we got tired of taking the train, and we started looking when we were coming back last year, and we're like, we're going to spend another $150 plus per, I think it was like $170 to $180 per person to take the train the rest of the way back to Tokyo. Because we had started in Tokyo, worked our way all the way across to the west coast of Japan, then we're working our way back. And then we're like, this is taking too long and it's costing a lot of money. And what we should have done is flew over to Fukuoka and worked our way back and just gone one way all the way back. But at some point I was like, hey, we're booking, I'm booking three tickets on JAL. We're flying from Hiroshima back to Tokyo. And it's like a 2-hour-ish flight from there. And then we were back in no time. It's like 6,000-7,000 miles, depending on how you book, which airline you book with.
And that's a great tip. I mean, I think, you know, in so many different countries and regions, we often just revert to whatever we think is the normal or you know, the standard in that area. You know, a lot of people, I think of Japan as, you know, take the train because you've got the Shinkansen. But I mean, when the costs can be that drastic, especially when you can use Alaska miles or Asia miles and such, I mean, there's definitely some economies, that is, some arbitrage, so to speak, that you can do.
Yeah, so, 6,000 United miles. I mean, it's 6,000 United miles to fly ANA. It's anywhere in Japan. So, I mean, you could fly to Okinawa for 6,000 miles on ANA economy class. JAL is 7,500 miles on AA. So, you know, and those are, by the way, AA, booking AA tickets, there's no taxes and fees.
I think we saw that with Cathay Pacific too. Right? We were very surprised. No credit card needed.
Yeah, because we booked that flight in the airport, right? Like a few hours before it was leaving. And I was like putting it in using my Asia miles account. I was like, it didn't ask for a credit card. And it was just a double take kind of moment, because you're like, how often do you book a flight and you don't need a credit card?
Yeah, zero tax and fees with United. I think it's like $3.50. So $3.50 and 6,000 miles, or on AA, 7,500 miles and no cash.
What a good deal.
Yeah, you can't beat that. So, Joe, I know we only have you for a limited time tonight. Any other topics that you want to cover before we close it out?
I just think that everything that this space has allowed me to do, and by which can allow anybody who's listening to this podcast to do, is so amazing. And I put here in our notes that I'm getting to do something this particular weekend. Tomorrow morning, I'm leaving with my son and visiting New York City. We've never been to New York City to visit. We've only been to position before. So, you know, I've positioned through New York City several times. And so I'm taking him, and we're doing an extended weekend trip, using up some expiring Hyatt and Bonvoy certificates, and doing some things that just wouldn't have been affordable. I mean, I think about the flights and things that we're getting to do. We were upgraded on AA because of my status, so we got upgraded on the flight there tomorrow. And then I'm flying back on Delta, which I don't have status, nor have I ever had any kind of status with Delta. And I booked it through Virgin Atlantic, which was 7,500 miles per person. And then if you think about it in terms of, I move a lot of points in during transfer bonuses, so it was really about 5,500 points per person. Then you used 5,500 Sky miles to upgrade us. It was 22,000 miles between the two currencies for both of us to fly home in first from New York versus 48,000 Sky miles. So yeah. Things that I would have never known to do before this space. And all of a sudden I'm able to do that while my wife and daughter go down to Florida on a separate trip of their own during the same time. We're leaving at the exact same time. Our flights, assuming everything goes according to plan, arrive within less than an hour of each other. And we're doing two separate trips that just were entirely unaffordable if we didn't have use of the tools in our tool chest from Travel Rewards.
I love it. I love it. And I love how you highlight, not every trip has to be aspirational. Not every trip has to be international either. I mean, it's the trip that you want. And if you can get the trip that you want at an affordable level. Heck, and what you're doing with the Virgin and the Delta, I didn't know that. I didn't know you could do that. So that's lovely to hear. So
yeah, because of the tight inner, you know, the cooperation between Virgin and Delta, you just go once you've pulled up your Delta PNR, you go in and they'll oftentimes have an upgrade offer for you. And because Cleveland's not one of their primary markets, it's not like flying, you know, Atlanta to Minneapolis or something like that. I'm sure that's nowhere near as cheap. But the upgrade, you know, I was like, well, shoot, you know, if I can put us, and I didn't mention it really this episode, but my son is autistic. So it, you know, for me, anytime I can upgrade our travel experience and put him in a space where I can not only protect him, but protect those around him. So give him more space to enjoy his, you know, whatever it is, his things, his time on his own. And, you know, I think it insulates everybody, makes the experience better for everyone. And I can do it at a cost that just wouldn't have been possible. I mean, I would have never spent $400 or $500 a ticket to buy these tickets, you know, but through these rewards that, you know, we've earned, it makes it so much more bearable.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Awesome. And don't forget the bagels. Don't forget the bagels. They are amazing.
I don't have that on my list. I have donuts and I have Japanese ice cream. And so there's actually a Japanese festival going on this weekend. One of the biggest food festivals, a street food festival that I'm planning to swing by and try out. But we have like 20 different things to stop by that we're going to see how many we can hit.
That's the problem with New York. Awesome. You have two. You just have it's the, your you know, it's your, the world is your oyster in New York. You can pretty much go any kind of cuisine you want. You know, they've got the best there. So
you just can't go wrong. You really can't go wrong. Not with the city that never sleeps. Joe, thank you so much for coming on. Always a privilege to have you join us. I swear every time we talk, I learn something new. And I just love the fact that you continue to give back to this community. You really are a pillar. And I'm not just saying that because you're on the podcast. I mean, between what you've done with the award travel 101 and 201 groups and everything, you do truly give back. And we both really sincerely appreciate that. And
love having you on the podcast. And Trevor's right. I learn so much every time you're on here, and, you know, and sometimes even relearn the things that I remember, but I guess forgotten, I forget sometimes. Yeah. So
yeah. Talk about a humble brag. I know so much that I've forgotten some.
Okay, if that's what you want to call it. Well, but
in this space, things ever changing too. I mean, it's so hard to keep up with everything. And so no matter how much you know or think you know, there's chances that something changed and you lost it and somebody else, you know, who's keeping up with that particular thing. And that's one of the things I love so much about the community is that, you know, there's always somebody who can help you out. It was something I asked today is like, you know, the thing about the JAL thing. I didn't know that JAL booking, I thought there was like a difference in pricing based on with the booking partners on BA, that there's a difference in pricing based on whether you booked one way or round trip. And somebody informed me it's a distance-based chart, which I hadn't paid attention to. So, you know, that's why there's a difference. You know, it could be anywhere between 80 and 110,000 round trip using that to book round trip tickets to Europe. So that's an interesting thing is it's distance based.
Wait, so let me just, I know we're trying to close out, but I just want to pull that thread just a little bit. So is that essentially implying that they take the combined distance of out and back, and if that combined distance happens to be less than the band that would be if you did two separate, that's how you get that savings?
That's my understanding. I haven't investigated it fully myself, but my understanding is that if you book the two one ways, it could be as low as 40,000 miles per person one way versus or 80,000 round trip. And then it's based on the band. So maybe you fly one way from the East Coast and the other way to the West Coast, and then it would combine it based on each of the bands separately.
That feels like such a Japanese thing that they would do. Rather than say, okay, the band is, you know, 4,000 miles and, you know, each way is 3,700. So, you know, you're in the 4,000 or maybe, you know, what I'd have to get an Excel spreadsheet to try to explain an example that where the combined amount, maybe it's 9,000 miles total versus 10,000 miles flown, and maybe that's where you see the savings. It sounds like we've got a little bit of research to do. But, maybe we leave it there and let our listeners do a little bit of commenting as we often encourage.
Yeah, something that I definitely need to do more research on and learn. And I'm sure there's a lot of people in the communities that's going to be listening to this that know way more about it than me. So I have my things. And that's, again, one of the things I love about all of these communities is how much everybody can help each other out.
Absolutely.
So, Joe, if you could just share how our listeners can find you.
I'm generally in the Award Travel 101 and 201 communities. I'm not too active on Facebook or any other platforms. I do have an Instagram account that only gets used here and there, so it's not worth sharing. But typically, you can find me in those groups, and I'm helping people out, helping out the community, and I'm probably. You may find me in other communities bouncing around and answering a question or here or there as well.
Joe, thank you. Well, that's the show. Thanks for joining us, and we hope you enjoyed listening.
If you've enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a Milenomics Patreon member and get access to even more in-depth miles, points, and travel content.
Until then, we hope your next story is a travel story.